This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We have some breeze and a mild shower or two today, but not too cold at the high temperature around 60. It's 47 degrees now at O'Hare and the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, Boeing and the U.S. have lost one of their last allies in the decision to keep the 737 MAX in the air. Canada has barred the MAX 8 and 9 from its airspace. Late yesterday, the FAA repeated its view that there's no basis for grounding Boeing's newest jet. We've seen the company's influence on the Dow this week with Boeing's support earlier today. The Dow was up more than 200 points. Now, after Canada's decision, Boeing stock has erased its gains. It's only fractionally higher, and the Dow is not enjoying quite the gains it saw earlier. We've got the blue chips up now 180 points to 25,736. NASDAQ up 69 points and the S&P higher by 25. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index still up 1%. A Commerce Department report finds an increased demand for business equipment in January. That's a sign of confidence despite worries about the global economy and trade. And the prices businesses pay for goods and services are not rising as quickly as thought. And finally, locally based Kraft Heinz is thinking of selling its Breakstone cottage cheese business, which CNBC reports could fetch a valuation around $400 million. Back to you, Cisco and Chris. Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, we are talking about the university cheating scandal. And also, there are legal ways, of course, to get into college. We'll talk about that, too.
We'll get insight on Wall Street from Mark Hulbert, the contrarian point of view. And economist Diane Swonk will join us, bring us up to date on some things going on, especially on the macro level here at home and also globally. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Corporate CEOs and showbiz stars are a part of the admissions bribery scandal involving top universities. We'll get to that a little later in our next segment. Right now, a busy day of data, including numbers on construction and manufacturing. And numbers like those tell us how America is feeling. Let's ask Diane Swonk. What do you see in this today, Diane?
Well, we did see some gains after big losses at the end of 2018. We saw a little bit of a bounce back in January, which is good news. The hard news, though, is on construction, as the bounce came after downward revisions to November and December, which were already dismal. On the construction data, I think that's the worst of the two reports. I think there is some silver lining in the durable goods data and the orders data, but the construction data shows that we, you know, are seeing some gains in public sector construction after losing a lot of ground. They're putting money into highway spending, but as we all know, they can't even keep up with filling the potholes, let alone doing repairs and upgrades to the infrastructure that we need. And so this is sort of, we've not seen any kind of budget proposals, despite bipartisan support for infrastructure, to correct that. We also saw a lot of weakness in retail, commercial construction. This, of course, a lot of retailers closing their doors. And it's just not enough to see warehouses opening up to distribute online stuff as these old, you know, more traditional brick-and-mortar stores closed down. So that's a bit of a downer. On the other side of the equation, we saw a little bit of a bounce in orders after a real long downtrend on manufacturing orders, core capital goods orders. So that's a sliver of silver lining in what has been a cloudy outlook so far. That's the good news. It did come off of a lot of declines, but the hope is that that will be the beginning of a new trend and see some comeback in investment. We're not expecting robust investment. It's still modest investment in the first quarter. The first quarter looks like it's just a little north of 1% in growth, but at least there's some orders out there by manufacturers, which means domestic demand is offsetting the weakness we're seeing from abroad.
A year ago, or a little over a year ago, the White House, made an effort to push some more money into people's pockets. Has that happened?
Well, we have seen, actually, the interesting thing about fiscal stimulus last year, between the tax cuts and the spending increases, the larger impact was actually in spending increases. People sort of missed the fact that we increased spending starting in the second quarter, federal spending quite substantially on defense and discretionary spending. The bipartisan budget that went through did boost it quite a bit, and that actually overshadowed the stimulus from tax cuts. We did see in the corporate sector a lot of tax cuts that went more into it, didn't show up in as much an investment as certainly the White House had hoped. We also saw some show up in consumer spending, but then dissipate by the end of the year. And that's something we're seeing now, is many of the tax cuts that helped to buoy things a little bit in the middle of last year are now dissipating, because that was, it happened last year. And it's even though tax rates are still lower in general, they're more complex. And many people are finding that, although tax refunds are expected to be up from a year ago, they're concentrated in high income instead of low income households, and many of the lower and middle income households are now getting a shortfall in refunds because they already got their tax cuts last year in lower withholdings, and they didn't realize they were spending their tax cuts and then some last year. So the effects of it are waning. This year we still have federal spending that's strong, but boy, it looks like we're going to have a showdown over the budget in 2020 for the fiscal year 2020. That budget starts October 1st, so we could fall off a fiscal cliff going right into the election year. Most people say, oh, that can't happen. It has, and it could.
Talking about what's behind wage growth, a lot of municipalities are raising the minimum wage at states, counties, cities. Is that at all part of some of the especially lower-end wage growth that we're seeing?
Yes. In fact, we have seen entry-level wages pick up quite substantially. What we've not seen out there is the trickle-up effect we used to see, and that is that managers and middle-income households used to also see a step up when entry-level workers got their wages raised. And we're in a tight labor market, so one would expect that to be a fairly easy transition. But in fact, we've seen some very large employers raise entry-level wages at the expense of management wages or the number of managers. So we've not had the trickle up yet that you would expect to see, especially given the low unemployment rate. So the great news is that entry-level wages are picking up, and low-wage families are getting more in their pocket, and that's really important, and you're seeing it in spending at big-box discounters, and that's great. What's not so great is that it's still not moving through the economy, and we still have very uneven gains, and we're still waiting after almost 10 years of an expansion to feel it more broad-based.
Always great insight. Thank you, Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Coming up, a nationwide college admissions scandal includes some big players in business.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Business CEOs and Hollywood stars are among the 50 people charged in a bribery scandal tied to college admissions. Let's take a closer look with Eric Larson, legal reporter at Bloomberg in New York. Eric, it seems sort of complicated here. There's a lot of moving parts here. Can you just kind of break it down for us so people understand what really went on here?
Sure. It is rather complicated, but what it really does boil down to is dozens of wealthy people paying millions of dollars in bribes and corrupt payments to cheat on their children's SAT and ACT tests and get them into elite colleges. And they were essentially exposed by chance when a separate federal investigation stumbled upon this scheme almost by chance when they were following up on another defendant in another case.
There's so much money that's in this case, so widespread. It seems surprising that I guess that it hasn't come to light previously, given the fact that you have so many people involved.
Yes, you have to wonder how much of this is still going on and whether this particular scheme was the only one of its kind. A lot of people say probably there are others. And even though it was a lot of money, there are plenty of much bigger frauds than this. It seems like the real fraud here isn't necessarily financial, but just the fact that kids who may not have deserved to get into these schools got in because their parents were rich.
This could turn out to be a lesson for everybody, and not just the teachers and the parents, but also the students.
Yeah, absolutely. Another question a lot of people are asking now is, what exactly did these particular students know the students, the children of these parents who were charged, dozens of them. And the way that the prosecutors laid out the case here, it does look like some of the children really did have to know that there was some impropriety going on here. And it remains to be seen what these colleges will do with the students. They're already in school in some cases. Are they going to be kicked out? None of them are being accused of any wrongdoing by the government, but in some cases they were instructed to pretend to be stupid on psychological exams so that they could get private SAT testing times. And in other cases, they were pretending to be athletes when they weren't. So to some extent, the kids had to have known.
How do we put this back together?
That's a really good question. From a legal perspective, which I've been focusing on, I would say that more cases like this need to be looked at by federal investigators and the FBI. I mean, they should be digging in to see what schemes like this might be going on, if any. As for the schools themselves, maybe that's a question for an education expert, but it seems like maybe they need to focus in on how people are getting in, where their staff are getting their money, and remove the whatever might be encouraging them to engage in kind of behavior.
Interesting that you also have, you have the schools, the coaches, you have the people paying the money and kind of the intermediaries, but you have some test administrators for the ACT, for the College Board also involved, which I guess creates, if not legal challenges, certainly some PR challenges for the College Board.
Yeah, I think a lot of people didn't know too much about how this particular process worked here, but really the heart of the SAT, ACT, the cheating scheme was with the practice where students can get to take the test on their own with their own proctor and sort of at any place that they choose, so long as they get a particular extension that they can get if they pretend to essentially have a learning disability. And that allowed the gentleman at the center of this alleged scheme to have a corrupt proctor there on hand to help the students cheat or to just completely fix their answers after the fact.
Yeah, very.
So who are these proctors? How many are there? And what kind of oversight does the ACT have on them? It seems to be a question.
Yeah, and might there be others? Maybe they're not making the big money, like in this case, but maybe doing it for smaller amounts.
That's not big money.
Yeah, no. But, I mean, someone might be doing this for, say, $100 or $200 instead of the hundreds of thousands involved in cases like this. Eric Larson, good insight. Thank you. Eric is a legal reporter at Bloomberg based in New York. And Bloomberg checks the markets next. WBBM News Time 12:25, a check of the markets from Bloomberg. Sponsored by Baird, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, we continue to see green here. The Dow up 181 points, NASDAQ up 72, or almost 1%. Similar gains for the S&P 500, advancing 25 points. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is gaining 1%. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We've had mixed prices here today. Corn has been down 2 to up 4 at the moment. December up 1 at 392.5. Beans have been up 6 to down 4 to 5. We have November's up 3.5 at 935.75. And July wheat's been down 12 to 13. We're down 6.75 at 454.5. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Stocks are rallying today. We'll see what's moving the markets and get the perspective of a market contrarian.
In Personal Finance Wednesday, there are ways to get into a good college without turning to bribery.
A judge sentences former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort to an additional 3.5 years in prison, and he now faces another indictment.
There's even more pressure on government regulators in the U.S. to take action after Canada became the latest country to ground the Boeing 737. 737 MAX 8 jet.
Wall Street, the Dow up 183 points, the NASDAQ up 71, the S&P up 25, and oil today is up nearly 2%. We have lots of clouds in Chicagoland, still some lingering rain showers. High near 60, right now 45 O'Hare, 47 Midway, and 48 along Chicago's lakefront.
WBBM News Time, 12:31. The markets are up at this hour, and we are joined by Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital and author of the book Calculated Risk here in Chicago. Are we taking any calculated risks, Michael Palumbo?
Good afternoon, Chris and Cisco. Thanks for having me on. You know, right now the market is continuing its uptrend after a bad week last week, and it certainly looks like bullish sentiment has come back to the markets after that terrible fourth quarter we had.
Well, yeah, and we saw the Dow Industrials and some other accounts take a nosedive this week, and today, right now, the Dow's up 182.
Yeah, so there's not a lot of news causing this rally today. I know people want to hear what's the reason. Well, sometimes there just isn't a specific reason. The market is, in my opinion, fair value here at S&P is at 2817. I think this is it certainly could run a little bit more, but we're right in about a fair value range. Market's up less than 1%. It's not a big move, but it has been a big move so far this year. This year, it's already up well over 10% and on pace for certainly one of the better years that we've had over the last 20 or 30 years.
So you see an opportunity.
Well, the opportunity, you know, is in picking the right sectors. And one of the sectors that, you know, there's news today and it's been on fire is the cannabis sector. And, you know, we see basically a transaction with Aurora Cannabis, which is up big today, and that's been a sector that has outperformed the market significantly this year. It's very risky, but it's a small sector, but it's up 30-40% already this year.
Now, let's talk about the risk there when it comes to cannabis. If you're dealing with an ETF or some other way where you're really betting on the sector, is that kind of a hedge where you can get into that market without as much risk? I'm thinking individual companies, who knows which one's still going to be here a year or two from now?
That's a great point. So when you do an ETF, obviously you are then diversifying throughout that sector. So if there's sector-related news, certainly that ETF will move with the sector, but then you don't have the individual stock risk as much, because if, let's say, a big company like Aurora comes out with some real bad news and the stock drops a lot, well, certainly that'll affect the ETF, but it won't. You know, you'll be looking at losses of 2-3% as opposed to, you know, any of these stocks could drop 30-40% in a day with some bad news, and they have in the past, and they've also risen in that kind of volatility too. So if you do want to have some exposure in this sector, an ETF wouldn't be a bad idea just to lower the volatility, because some of these stocks are just crazy how much they move.
Well, let's talk about Boeing too. Obviously, with its plane problems overseas and now kind of spreading to many other countries, now saying the 737 MAX 8 is banned from their airspace. Kind of a challenge for an investor on what to do given this rough patch and not really knowing what's going to happen from here.
That's a great point. So Boeing's down 10% just in the last week. The stock itself, you know, the fundamentals of the stock haven't changed one bit. I mean, it's a fantastic operation, and it trades at a reasonable PE of around 20. But you know, this news, the question is how bad is this going to get? So you've had two planes crash, two 737 MAX 8. So that's the name of that's the actual plane that's gone down. And so because they're the same planes and because the crashes have been similar, a lot of countries have just banned them completely. And so the U.S. is not yet, but you question, well, is there really a problem with that jet? Because it's a newer jet. It's one of the newest ones Boeing's put out. And, you know, if that's the case, well, then obviously this sell-off will continue. But it's just hard to tell right now. You know, you've had two instances. That certainly doesn't mean that the jet is flawed. It could be randomness. But countries, because of consumer concerns, countries have responded by banning the jet completely. And, you know, if that continues, well, certainly that will hurt Boeing stock even further.
And those who want to invest in that area, is there an other opportunity?
Well, sure, Airbus. You know, that's the competitor, and they will benefit from Boeing's pains. Now we'll see what happens going forward. Boeing has a long history of being probably the best jet maker in the world, but that can change if it's shown that there is flaws in this new jet. And certainly if countries ban them and continue this ban, it can only help Airbus.
Always good information. Thanks, Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk, based here in Chicago. Coming up, we'll get a check of traffic and weather, also Personal Finance Wednesday. Tips on getting into a good college without resorting to criminal activity.
News that makes you money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday here on the Noon Business Hour. The subject of college admissions is in the news following charges celebrities and other parents used bribes to get their kids into certain universities. Let's talk about the right way to go about it. Deb Donnelly, post-high school counselor at New Trier High School here in Winnetka. Good to have you back with us, Deb. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Cisco. It's good to be here.
Let's begin by talking about those tests, SAT, ACT, very important tests for most schools. How can parents go about giving their kids a leg up, but a legal leg up when it comes to those?
Well, the legal leg up is have your student take a challenging program of studies. Don't short your students in taking the English, the math, the social studies, the lab science, and the classical and modern languages, because that's the foundation for doing well in the exams. Many parents will pay for test prep, but we'd prefer to see a set of test scores first to see where the student has strengths and weaknesses.
And when it comes to those tests, there's you mentioned the prep ahead of time. Is it even as simple as, hey, the week before, make sure you're getting good sleep, eating well? I mean, just being prepared in that way for the test.
Absolutely. I think more students are nervous about the test, and anxiety makes a bigger difference than actually not knowing how to take the tests or not being able to do well.
Are we putting too much attention on the test itself and not what the person has learned? And is there a way to measure that?
I think there is. I think that, yes, you'll find an increasing number of colleges and universities no longer depend on standardized tests, and students have the option not even to submit test scores. That list can be found on fairtest.org, F-A-I-R-T-E-S-T.org. But to answer your question, Chris, yes. Honestly, I would rather have a student be in an appropriately challenging program of studies, and I'd rather have somebody who's able to bolster their weaknesses and highlight their strengths. And we want people who are interesting. Colleges want people who are interesting people, people invested in their education. It's not necessarily about beating out the competition all the time, but it's about the student growing into the best you can be.
I don't want to put you on the spot here because you know, I trust you, but has there ever been any talk in your area and in the schools in your area that this kind of stuff goes on?
There, you know, we talk about possibilities, but no, none of that, to our knowledge, has ever gone on in this community or any place where I've ever worked.
Let's talk about social media. Nowadays, young people, I mean, man, everything is online. Any warnings or colleges searching social media as they consider who to bring in?
I think that's a huge point, and we do encourage students to do many things. First and foremost, choose an email address that is appropriate and that is kind of adult, if you will, even your name at whatever.com or .org. We also hope that students will scrub their social media and make sure that they don't have pictures of themselves engaging in activities that they wouldn't be proud to have a college admissions officer see. I do think that colleges, when they have the time, will certainly, you know, double check. I remember there was a scandal in Chicagoland years and years ago, and students' names were published in one of our, well, the TRIB, actually, and those college admission reps were checking their rosters to see if any of those students were, you know, admitted or had applied to their colleges.
So what you're saying is godsgifttohumanity@gmail.com. Probably not going to be good. Yeah. All right. Thanks,
right.
Deb. Thanks very much. Good insight.
Thanks, Deb.
Deb Donnelly, post-high school counselor at New Trier. Be sure to join us the week of May 13th for our annual Education Week, covering the business of getting into college.
A wealth of information for managing your money. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Stocks are higher today. Let's get a view of a market contrarian. We welcome Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's MarketWatch.com in Washington. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Mark. What are we looking at today in terms of being a contrarian?
Well, contrarians, as you know, are looking for periods of either extreme optimism or extreme pessimism. And right now we're in between those two extremes. So I'll get to that in a minute, but I think contrarian analysis would be relatively on the neutral side of things, which isn't all that exciting, but it turns out not every method offers an opinion about the market short-term at each stage of the way. But you may recall a couple weeks ago when the market was hitting its close to all-time highs, late February, the Dow went above 26,000, was within a several hundred points of its all-time high. We were showing excessive bullishness among the sentiment indices that we calculate. In fact, one of them was more bullish than it had been in all but around 2.5% of days. In other words, very few days were even more bullish over the last 20 years. So that shows how excessively bullish some of these advisors were. So they were contrarians were indeed, as I wrote on my MarketWatch column at the time, were expecting somewhat of a pullback. Luckily, and this is the reason I say luckily, is contrarians like to see whether people run for the exits quickly or stubbornly remain bullish. And many of the advisors have pulled back very quickly. And so, as I say, we're now into the neutral range, which is to say that until we get back to either excessive bullishness or excessive bearishness, contrarians are taking more of a wait-and-see attitude.
Boeing has certainly pulled a lot of people into one area.
Well, that's right. It's interesting. I was talking with my editors about a column on Boeing. It turns out that if you go back and look, unless it's something that's going to bankrupt the company, an example of that would be like PG&E Electric after the terrible fires in California late last year, and years before, in fact, it's likely that events like this are relatively good buying opportunities, but no one likes to step up to the plate.
Well, say it.
It looks like that's the last thing in the world they'd want to do.
Is it easier for the contrarian when markets are either way on the way up or way on the way down, when there is more uncertainty, ups and downs, a little more volatility? Is that tougher for the contrarian?
Well, it really doesn't depend on the volatility. It depends on what the underlying mood is in the market, and there are various ways of tracking that mood. What we do, it's just one way, but we find it a reliable way, is look at the sentiment among those market timers who are trying to predict the market short-term movement, and very reliably, when they are excessively bearish, the market tends to go back up. Often, that is the case when there's a lot of volatility, like you ask, but it's not always the case. And usually, they'll be excessively bullish when the market's going up almost inexorably day after day. And indeed, for much of the first 6 weeks of this year, we saw that. So it's perhaps not a surprise that we saw so much bullishness in the wake of that. But the one nice thing I think about, there are several, but one nice thing about contrarian analysis is that it doesn't have to predict in advance what the market will do. It lets the market tell the story and then say, hey, are we at a time when there's excessive bullishness or excessive bearishness, and then acts accordingly. And like a lot of systems, the systems don't generate a signal every day. And I think now is one of those where we don't really know which way the direction of the market is over the short term, at least from the perspective of market mood and sentiment.
Thanks so much, as always, Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. Bloomberg checks the markets next.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. Let's get a wrap-up on the Noon Business Hour with Elisa Peretti.
Well, Chris, we've got gains across the board. The Dow today joining NASDAQ and S&P heading higher, and all three benchmarks racking up gains for the week at this point. The Dow up 174 points to 25,728. NASDAQ and S&P higher by 1% on the day. The composite advancing 75 points, S&P higher by 25. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg also in the green, up 1%. Crude futures are higher by more than 2% and pushing above $58 a barrel. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.